Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hey there, podcast explorers. Welcome to Pit Chat, the podcast where we gather round, toss in some hot topics, and let the flames of conversation burn bright. I'm Michelle.
And I'm Wayne.
And together we're your hosts on this journey through the sizzling landscape of current events, sprinkled with a dash of mystery, a pinch of the unexplained, and a whole lot of fun.
That's right, Michelle. We're not just here to talk about the everyday stuff. We're diving deep into the realms of the unknown, exploring UFO sightings, unraveling paranormal mysteries, and maybe even roasting a marshmallow or two along the way.
So whether you're a skeptic or a believer, join us as we stoke the flames of curiosity and bring you the hottest takes on the coolest conspiracies. It's like sitting around a fire pit with your friends, but with a bit of extraterrestrial excitement.
Each episode, we'll be serving up a blend of the latest headlines, intriguing stories, and a touch of the supernatural, from politics to pop culture, and from ghost to government secrets. We've got it all covered.
And hey, if you've ever looked up at the night sky and wondered what's out there, or if you've ever felt a chill down your spine in a supposedly haunted place, you're in the right spot.
So, grab a seat, cozy up by the fire, and let's spark some conversation. This is Pit Chat, where the ordinary meets the extraordinary. Get ready for a wild ride down the rabbit hole.
On an escalator.
Okay, greetings everyone. We've got a returning, very special guest tonight, and that is Nathaniel Gillis. I can't wait to get into this conversation. As some of you know in the chat room, by the way, hello everyone in chat room, we have Michelle not being here tonight. So Michelle is not here, so I'm running everything on my own, and I got a perfect person to help me with the show tonight, and that's Nathaniel. So we're just going to go ahead and jump into this, because this is going to be amazing. So let's bring him on. Nathaniel Gillis. Hello, sir.
Hello, brother. How are you doing tonight? It's good to be here.
Man, I am fighting the Michigan crud as always, but it's not as bad as the last time. But yeah, thanks for joining me tonight, man.
Not a problem, brother. Anytime. I had a really good time last time I was with you guys. And of course I come back.
Well, you know, we did a show together. It was a while ago now. And for those of the people that are new and our live show is new, you were not on the live show. That was back when we were still pre-recording just audio podcasts. Mm-hmm. For those new people out there, yeah. Can you tell us a little bit about what is a religious demonologist and what do you do?
Well, I'm not an exorcist, and I know a lot of people in the field confuse the two. And so when I do lectures or presentations and they don't hear me talking about exorcisms that I've done, they're like, what in the world? So I don't do exorcisms. I am more of the academic side of demonology. And so while in times past I have done cleansings, a little bit different, not quite an exorcism. But right now what I've been doing is focusing on the academic aspect of the research. Back in the day when I was doing cleansings, I'll be honest with you, I had a couple cases where whatever entity was present in that house did not fit the blueprint of a demon, did not respond to any amulets, the prayers I was quoting, no effect at all. And so it made me question what this entity really was. And so that's when I decided, there's a lot of research in the field that are top heavy or bottom heavy, right? They have either, they're just either academic or they're hands-on. And so I was wanting to be more balanced. And so right now, in the season I'm in right now, I am pouring myself into demonological literature and looking for any and all behavioral patterns. And here we'll talk about this here in a second, but any and all behavioral patterns that connect to ufology and the UFO abduction phenomenon. And my goodness, are there a lot? A ton.
Yeah, and I think the last time that you were on, we ruffled some feathers because people out there do not like the connections of UFOs to the demonic or spiritual realm. And I'm right. kind of the opinion that I don't think they're mutually exclusive. I think they're they can both exist at the same time. These could be two separate things, but they seem to follow a pattern. So I guess I want to kind of have you dig into that a little bit. Like when we last talked, and this was not on the show, you were telling me that you were getting into some new research and found out some new things and stuff. Right. So if you want to jump right into that, that would be awesome.
Well, I'm creating a new field of research called necronetics. It's a combination of necromancy and genetics, And this is how I believe this intelligence is self-replicating its species. And so what I've been doing as of late is I've been going into the occult and looking at that side of this phenomenon, going from biblical antiquity, going all the way up to the 16th century. And what I realized was, as I was studying demonology, I didn't realize that I was studying something else. Like, when I got into the case studies, it was almost like this intelligence, which again, I'm working off of the model that it's singular, not plural. And so what I was thinking is, okay, I'm looking for demons, okay, looking at behavioral patterns. And sure enough, what I was coming across case studies where the experiencer was encountering an entity that fit no blueprint in demonology whatsoever. The pathology was different. The belief system was different. And when I started realizing that even in demonology, specifically with Father Sinistrori of Amino, Montague Summers, Bernard of Gordon, they all knew that there was seemingly two incarnations of a singular intelligence. This is going to get very deep very quickly. So two incarnations of the same intelligence. And whenever they would play by the demonic rule, like let's say, okay, they thought it's a demon, they would say, okay, then I'm going to treat you like a demon, and I'm going to pull out these amulets and these prayers and holy water. And to their utter astonishment, whatever that was transcended that microcosm. And so it appears to me that whatever we are dealing with is something that will allow us to assume and then play by rules. And then at a certain point upon its choosing, it will transcend that completely. And then we see what I call the proto-intelligence. In whatever that is behind the phenomenon, we're not prepared for, my friend. And so what I started realizing is, okay, there's a reason why some of these demons act like that. And then from time to time, you'll see something else that doesn't fit the bill at all. And so, yeah, so what I'm looking at now in my current model is a singular intelligence. And for those who follow my research, you guys already know this, a singular intelligence that is evolving according to our awareness of it throughout history, both in ufology and in demonology. And this is also interesting too. The reason it is evolving is to evade. And what I've been noticing in the research, even from biblical antiquity, Babylonian texts, ritual bowls, is that regardless of the archetype it steps into, there are certain agendas that it will kind of interweave into the fabric of history. So what I'm saying is, yes, it's demonic in the first century, but there was still a hybridization program. Well, now they're aliens in the 21st century. Well, there's still a hybridization program. And so what I'm looking at now, my current model, is that whatever this is, it's co-evolving with us. It's adapting to us. And it's evolving according to our awareness of it. Now, I tend to ramble, so if you want to shut up, I'll shut up. But that's my current model, and I think that once we strip these case studies in antiquity from their religious connotations and just look at them strictly from an experiential standpoint, then absolutely. We have the same intelligence doing the same things, but wearing different masks and stepping into different archetypes. And there's a reason for that, which I will get into here later.
So are you thinking that the cases of modern day UFO abduction, and by modern day, I'm talking 40s on or so, whenever people were reporting this and we learn about these things in contemporary times, do you think there's a connection to what they used to call in antiquity, like the succubus, the incubus, and the even like the fae coming to steal your child and putting a doppelganger or something in place of that? Can you dig into that a little bit?
Yeah, so there are various behavioral patterns that kind of correlate. Number one, in antiquity, we have an entity called Lamashtu. And Lamashtu was a being that would specifically target pregnant women. It would descend down upon the woman at nighttime while she's sleeping, force her to open her eyes, and then as it's hovering over her, stare in to her eyes. And then when the victim would wake up, because they would induce her into a dreamlike state, the baby's gone from the womb. And so what these experiences started to do was creating a second face out of iron, hoping, literally groping in the darkness, whatever works, I'll take it, hoping that while they're sleeping, that entity will stare into the wrong eyes, and therefore she gets to keep her child. So the lie that this phenomenon has propagated throughout the field, it cannot be understated. The missing fetus syndrome is not modern, okay? The implant we're going to get into that in a second. The implant used in experiencers is not new technology. All of this originated in antiquity at the emergence of altars. Can I go to that for a second?
Yeah, can you elaborate on that a little bit?
Yeah, for sure. So there are two ways the phenomenon self-replicates. It replicates through implantation and impregnation.
Okay.
Number one, in Mesopotamia, at the arrival of the first altars, practitioners, in bibliography, theology, they would call them idolaters, but practitioners, they would erect an altar. They would stare into the darkness of night, and something was in the shadows. Something was wanting to become incarnate. And so out of nowhere, these practitioners got the harebrained idea that here, I'm going to do this. They extinguished their campfire. They repaired themselves to their personal quarters. And ding, they would take a small piece of metal, carve the name of an unclean spirit onto it and into it, and implant that into a body, sometimes living, sometimes dead. But the concept of self-replication it's fascinating. Essentially what occurred was the memory would merge with the metal. Consciousness would kind of merge with the word itself, the name, the letters. And then when that's implanted into the body, now that entity has a new biological avatar. It sees through the eyes of that individual.
Is this kind of like haunted? Could you consider this like haunted objects that people sometimes talk about?
Yes, that's occultic transference. Absolutely.
Okay. All right.
And so these two characteristics of the phenomenon were both present alongside of each other in antiquity. The erection of an altar, and then immediately out of nowhere, the emergence of technology that transcended their knowledge at the time is very important. And so that was one way they would self-replicate their species, through implantation. And then we start getting ritual bowls where now dream demons are manifesting to women in their nightmares. Now, there's a lot of demonologists that suggest that these beings are not actually entering into the nightmare itself. No, I've experienced that phenomenon. I had a succubus, I can't say it was succubus, we weren't like doing anything, it was just straddling me. But in the middle of the nightmare, I'm trying to fight it off of me. to my utter astonishment, when I woke myself up and my eyes adjusted to the darkness, it is still on top of me. And so it was literally in the nightmare and in this reality at the same time. And so in this part of history, what we have are the incubi encounters, where now the phenomenon mutated. Okay, it still kept the implant. Okay, that's why we have it today. But now it began the hybridization program, where women are inseminated by entities that appear as their husbands, ex-lovers, boyfriends. And we can go down that road. But my point is this: this is not a new intelligence. What we're witnessing is something that is compartmentalizing itself in an effort to obfuscate its true nature. See, if I can apply Wayne rules to Nathaniel Gillis, it's not going to work. And so what we're looking at is an entity that has diversified its identity, hoping and literally stepping into archetypes and allowing us to believe that, okay, it plays by these rules up until it chooses not to. And then you see the proto-intelligence transcend that microcosm in whatever that is, we're just now starting to learn about.
Wow. Okay. So then what? Okay. So we got an idea of the implants from antiquity. What about modern day? Same thing? Or, I mean, I don't know of any people that have implants that say that they have changed right. personality or something like that. It seems to almost be like a tracker type of device or something.
Correct.
Or is there something else going on?
Oh, absolutely. Matter of fact, behind me in here, I have a book called Beyond UFOs. It's from the Free Organization. And it was an academic study by like a plethora of academic scholars. Well, in one of their case studies was a young man who is a chronic abductee. And he had an implant in his body. He had been working with a researcher regarding that implant. But sometimes, and you probably heard this from Whitley Strieber and others, where it'll turn on, it'll buzz or something. And okay, what? They must be coming. This occurred to him. And his testimony is frightening. He said, because as he feels this energy kind of just flood the room, his implant starts up. And it was at that moment, he's not looking through his eyes anymore. He's looking through the eyes of the people in the crowd. He said, and as the craft is hovering over my house, he said, I am looking through their eyes as they're descending down upon my home. Now, if he's looking through their eyes, who's looking through his? And this is why they've told us we're putting this in you, because we're going to track you. At any point, they could step in and download consciousness, and then we would have possession, and that's kind of whatever. But my point is this: all of this originated in antiquity. The very first symptom of their incarnation was, in fact, an altar. And then the emergence of these other characteristics of the phenomenon. So, yes, you have technology, so all kinds of stuff. But isn't it interesting, my friend, that a lot of this began in the fertile soil of ritual magic?
Explain.
Well, that's essentially what this was. Something in the ether wanted to become incarnate.
Oh, okay. So you're saying that humans here were somehow able to reach across and grab a hold of these
absolutely
entities or these personas and bring mm-hmm. them forward. Is this like a Crowley JPL, Jet
absolutely.
Propulsion yes. Lab kind of
absolutely.
Thing?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And what's so fascinating about this is when I was doing my research regarding demonology, I'm like, okay, everything fits except the technology, right? The technology is not present at all.
Right, right.
It wasn't until I got a hold of the book called Eros and Evil by Ariel Masters, where he's a scholar and a half, and he's going down these case studies, and he highlighted a very subtle nuance, but it kind of blew everything open for me. He said that in witch era literature, these practitioners being called up by, and this is quote, air quotes, demon lovers, all that, right? But they were on demonic flights. What? And when they got to their location, their undisclosed location of the entity's choosing, it was almost as if the phenomenon performed for the practitioners. It was a theatrical performance in which they thought they were copulated with corpses and demons. And then there were case studies that came to the fore where all of that took place, but out of nowhere, suddenly the technology fuzzed in and out. And for a fleeting moment, these practitioners, both male and female, are looking around and they're not on the backside of a mountain. That's not a corpse. They were being poked and prodded by metallic objects that were made according to the measure of a man. Literally, it was designed to convince the senses that this is what is occurring. And yet at the end of the day, it was nothing but virtual reality scenarios. That is what's happening right now in the UFO abduction phenomenon. And I don't want to pig trail because we can go any direction you want to.
Right.
But what I'm suggesting here is that because we've compartmentalized the phenomenon, we've not allowed the incubi victim to talk to the UFO abduction experiencer. Both of them have missing fetuses. Both of them are being inseminated by dream demons. Why aren't we destroying these walls and why aren't we building bridges? Because at the end of the day, it's quite obvious. It's doing the same thing, but it's leaning into archetypes. And I'll shut up.
Dude, that's fascinating. You know, because now I don't know if you saw this, but the recent release from Arrow or whatever they are now saying right. that there's no ET stuff, but then I look at who they talk to, you know, who are they, or right. there's no evidence. And it's a small circle of people that are talking and, you know, pulled in David Grush and stuff. But I can't help to think that these people are becoming puppets or being played to cover up the existence of whatever these entities are. Just acknowledging that right. they exist is something they don't want.
Correct. Yeah. I mean, if you're going to acknowledge that there are spacecraft out there that are dominating our airspace, then you're going to have to acknowledge that they have occupants. And those occupants are not always love and light. That will validate a large portion of our population, people that have been silenced, punished, you know, all that.
Oh, yeah.
You're going to tell them it actually occurred. And it's disturbing. But let's get back to this idea that it all started with altars. When you look, and I got a list here, when you look at the earliest contactees in ufology, I know you probably do. Do you know, and speaking in general, do you know what they were using to contact these non-human intelligences? Let's go through the list, shall we? All right.
Oh boy, I'm about to get creeped out.
Aleister Crowley was using Ouija boards. Okay. He was ingesting hashish. That's how he met Lamb. He altered his consciousness, and that entity came forward. Okay. Albert Bender, another contactee in the 50s, he built an altar in his attic to contact aliens, right? George Hunt Williamson had created a homemade Ouija board contacting extraterrestrials. Now, already the current model of the extraterrestrial hypothesis is starting to crack because we use this technology, if you will, to contact spirits, not aliens. And so if you look at the way these beings manifested first, it was in seances. It was in ritual magic. And it's no different in antiquity. No different. The only contrast is we have compartmentalized it. And a lot of people are still stuck in that model where they're doing this, but they don't understand that if that is what they're responding to, then we need to look at disclosure in a different light. Ooh. Let's go down that road.
Yeah. We just had Stephen Bassett on here. And right. You know, it's
not pumped up, brother. Oh, yeah. So watch this. So if our model of the phenomenon is wrong, strictly materialistic scientism, or if it's all alien, right? If our model of this intelligence is wrong, then by virtue of that being wrong, our timeline is wrong. Now that would place, okay, let's look at the altars, the emergence of technology, the transcendence, all that. That would place disclosure, not in the future. It's not, okay, disclosure of technology. No, it's the disclosure of the very first altars ever erected. And that is in antiquity. If that is in fact the model that is accurate. But it is irrefutable. It is irrefutable that time and time again, something is breathing in the darkness, seeking to become incarnate. And because it courts our human condition, it will take people into states of involuntary initiations and then give them something. And this is a pathological trait that just, it's over and over and over again. This is why Jack Parsons knew, sure, I could go out there and probe space with NASA. I know it didn't exist, but you know, of course I can get a rocket ship and go out there and try to, no. Here's how he contacted the phenomenon, through ritual magic. And by virtue of ritual magic, they imparted to Jack Parsons technology. So it's a give and take relationship. And it's getting really interesting.
Okay, this is making me think of the book of Enoch.
Right.
Where it was it the Nephilim, which gave man technology back in the day?
Absolutely. According to the human condition, do you want transcendence? Yes, I want transcendence. Okay, build me an altar. So getting back to this idea, okay, are they demons? We're getting there. Are they demons or are they aliens? In my perspective, that's a little too binary for me. Binary. I'll tell you why. Because I had a case where people say I always tell the same stories. Well, yeah, I'm not going to make up new case studies. I've had that's just no.
Right.
But I had a case study where it was a remote viewer, and I worked with his son, talking to him and everything. This gentleman would go in and out of his body, and he would encounter his guides. And it's fascinating because he's astral, I guess, in the astral realm, out of his body. But he would always be in a metallic room. The room is metal, floor and the walls, and his guides would flank him on the right and the left. Now, this case study should really, really concern us, because it takes all of our models and just breaks them into pieces. Well, anyways, he's there with his guides. And at that point in his career, he was pretty famous locally. He was giving, you know, readings to celebrities and local ball players. Well, he's in front of these beings. They look like his guides. They're acting like his guides. But for a little bit, he's looking at them. They're looking at him. And he said a tension hit the room. And that's when he realized that these are not my guides at all. He said, suddenly, they changed their appearance into something that looked inhuman, something that wasn't even alien. Next thing he knows, and this is according to his son, he said, next thing I know, my dad is running down the stairs. He said, I was playing video games. I'm done at this point. I'm thinking, okay, what is going on? He said, my dad was inconsolable. He had a massive heart attack. Now, I'm telling you, all models collapse after this case study, for me at least, just speaking personally. But as they were taking his shirt off to help him stay alive, from underneath the skin, hey, Jason, what's going on, bub? From underneath the skin, subdermal scarifications begin to move themselves from underneath to the surface. These were occult symbols.
That is so messed up, man.
Oh, we're in for it. And I'm not trying to, again, people, oh, well, you know, he's a big fear monger. No, I'm a realist. And I know what I'm talking about. All right? I don't want to make anybody mad, but I'm saying I know this because I've researched it. I've experienced it. I've talked to experiencers. And I hope the chat ain't eating me up. I apologize.
No, but, it's good, so, man. It's good.
These amulets themselves, they, like, okay, if we were to employ them, it would make absolutely no sense. Okay, like one of them was the Star of David. And this happened more than once, by the way. Another one was a cross. And then there was an Egyptian hieroglyph arching over both of them. Now, I am very good friends with scholars and practitioners. I had sent this out to a group of them, and some were in, you know, Thelema, others were in Sufi, all of them. Sufism, it didn't matter. Whatever magic they're employing, it transcends ours. So what am I seeing? What I'm seeing is, it seems like where in times past we believe that the phenomenon employed technology more than anything. And yet, my friend, the approach these scientists are taking right now in the 21st century, they're not out there waving technology. They're building earthen altars in New Mexico deserts. That ought to tell us something. And at what point, okay, I mean, I'm not going to deal with percentages, but at what point do we start to question, what are these things? And we'll get into who's conjuring who in a bit. But again, it seems like it's not wanting technology from us. It's wanting worship. And the magic they're employing has been documented by our federal government. They know this. And so that is the model, ladies and gentlemen. That's the model based upon the evidence. That's the model it is responding to. So forget about Nathaniel Gillis. Who cares about what I think? What does the phenomenon value?
It's going to value people in positions of power. So whatever the positions in power want to project out there, it's going to answer, right?
Yes, yes. And I can go into this real quick too. Good. I'm sorry.
Oh, I was just going to say, there's a great question. I'm getting some questions lined up, but I got to ask this one. Nobody has asked, what even is magic? It's always sort of been there. So why don't you jump on that?
Well, that's a great question, because the phenomenon, again, as it's incarnating throughout history, it will create propaganda. And because it is incarnating again into a new archetype, it wants us to believe that the old intelligence completely separate. But if we look at antiquity and we see these earliest practitioners, the phenomenon wants us to believe that the primordial man out of nowhere, okay, just decides to create a series of letters, string them into words, okay, and have it designed even to the phonetic rendering, the guttural nuance that comes out of the body cavity. All of that was designed in the imagination of the earliest practitioner. No, sir. I would suggest to everyone that the phenomenon is allowing us to believe we are in control of the conjurings, when in fact we're the ones being conjured. And once we see the phenomenon through that lens, then we realize why Jack Parsons was blown up. Why it was that each and every time he was trying to transcend this body, they were wanting more and more. And what we're realizing now in the field is that because it's diversified itself, okay, for instance, it's a demon. Now, there's a lot of people that follow me that are evangelical. I love you guys. I'm not, you know, attacking anything. I'm strictly dealing, objectively, mind you, with the current models we have created of the phenomenon. So, okay, demons do demon things, okay? Look at Ed Warren. One of his case studies, he said, and I'm not trashing anybody, but let's look at the model. He said that he witnessed a demon with horns. Okay, that is an invention. There were no demons with horns. Matter of fact, if you go into ancient texts, we wore the horns first because it was a sign of divinity. It was like a crown. And because we evolved in that behavioral pattern, the phenomenon did as well. Okay? Thank you. Thank you, Dorothy. I'm starting to lose my voice, but watch this.
Thank you, Dorothy.
when the phenomenon manifests to Ed Warren, why is it manifesting something that was originally a human trait, a human accessory? Because it's feeding into the dogmatism of the day. And that, my friend, implies that it's not a demon at all, it's a mask.
You know, Nathaniel, I want to, this got dark really fast, and now it's going to even get darker because I know from just the personal research I've done and other shows I've heard with various other people that Crowley and Parsons were also involved in, and since this question was asked, what is this magic stuff?
Right, right.
They were involved with sex magic.
Correct.
Okay, so what is the difference, and how is that supposed to work?
Ooh. Well, I'm going to have to take you all the way back to, well, witcher literature, even the Apocrypha of John, where there is yet a connection between the sourcing, and I'm not going to ignore that. I'm going to kind of coalesce into that area. But within the incubi and succubi literature, early demonologists believed, number one, that they were milking the carcasses of the dead. That's Father Sinister of Amino. Okay. And at first blush, they got together and said, you know what it sounds like, according to the hybridization program, they're trying to create project. It sounds like their victimology is centered around the vitality of the man. We're going to source our secretion from him and not from him. And then the fertility of the woman. We're going to self-replicate through her, not through her. And yet when they begin to triangulate where the phenomenon was in graveyards, it matched a lot of the incantations found in handwritten grimoires from practitioners. And so that's when they realized that, yes, at times it will harvest and source their secretions based on vitality and fertility. But a lot of what they're taking from the mortal is centered around the efficacy needed within ritual magic. Okay. The very first documented succubus case in ufology, not an alien gray, it's a humanoid figure who, after she copulated with the man, she grabbed her stomach, pointed up in the air, and then he was abducted. And this individual, this is fascinating, said that his abductors were drinking blood out of chalices. And so when you're getting into this again, it's ceremonial magic. Who created this stuff? I know it's getting dark, brother. I'm sorry. I mean, yeah. And I can make it lighter if you want, but what I'm suggesting here is in antiquity, the phenomenon conjured us. It gave us ladders made of letters and beckoned us to ascend. Now, the problem we're facing in modernity is when looking at Parsons and looking at Crowley. I was just reading Nick Redfern's book, The Final Events. Whatever they did, okay, the Babylon working, whatever portal they opened up, it was at that point in history that the phenomenon, it was almost like it had more of a foothold than ever before. And then suddenly you have Kenneth Arnold, who, by the way, knew Jack Parsons. Now I'm gonna hit on something here in a second so I can show you guys how this intelligence is evolving. Kenneth Arnold says, I see these crafts that are skipping like flying saucers. Now, when that landed and took root in the vernacular of the populace, then the phenomenon began to manifest as flying saucers. So I would suggest to everyone that the model of, you know, oh my God, it's dichotomies. No, it's duality. The model, binary model of either aliens or demons, we need to reconsider some things. Because a lot of what this intelligence is employing does seem to be like a program where it is adapting to us. And I have a case study right now where an entity actually manifested to a young girl and was measuring her belief in the image it was manifesting in. Measuring her belief, my friend. Do you believe in this archetype? So I would suggest, again, whatever we're dealing with is something that it's the proto-intelligence. It is the source, but it's hyper evasive. And again, and I'll go down this because I tend to just take over for Gaming because I'm used to lecturing. When we look at why it's diversifying its identity, here's why. Because if you apply laws to that, you'll never know which laws that I abide by until those laws fail and I step in. And now you're looking into the eyes of something you had no idea existed. And now you're in a completely different concept. That's what Father Sinistrari experienced. My holy water's not working. Why? Because the archetype was peeled off. Now you're staring into the eyes of the entity that was wearing the mask itself. And this is going to be, there's a lot of people that are going to follow my work and be like, okay, this is completely antithetical than what you've been teaching. I understand that. But I also have evidence.
Okay. All right. So I have something I want to throw at you here.
Okay.
I was thinking about this a lot today. And what was coming to mind is that modern day humans are buffeted. In other words, mm-hmm. we're protected. And I need to grab a drink here myself.
A shot. It's that dark, yeah. Right?
No doubt, this is that special antioxidant water stuff. But we're buffeted by our technologies and by our society of modern day of being kind of coddled, and we are much different with it than what we were in antiquity.
Right.
And I have this feeling that humans were very much advanced and very close to whatever these entities were and might have actually understood them more than what we do now. I think, like Parsons and all of them, that were able to open or create an altar for these things. I think they're the kind of people that might have discovered something from the past in order to do this. And these people in power that you hear about the different rituals, and now you got Baphomet sitting in front of, you know, the Ten Commandments, or you're replacing the Ten Commandments with the Satanic Bible, and you know, all of this weird stuff that's going on. But I kind of have this feeling that we were very much different. And I think that's maybe why we're kind of beckoned. We have a source that doesn't seem like a source of power other than just physical power that seems like it doesn't activate unless we experience some kind of trauma. And maybe these things are traumatizing us to excite that ability, and they are able to feed off of that. I don't know. It was just some random thoughts that were going through my head today.
That's good, man. That's good. Because, yeah.
I mean, humans have been on this planet. They keep on making us older and older. Homo sapiens have been around 800,000 years now, a million years at some point. But it's only within the last 300 years we've gotten to where we are today. So you mean to tell me for, you know, 950,000 years, we've done nothing but run around and use spears and stuff? I find that very hard to believe.
Absolutely.
So, you know, and I think about like child sacrifice and these kind of things. And like you were just saying with the measuring the child's, the young girl's belief in the archetype. That's just
crazy. You're going to tell, I'm supposed to believe an alien flew light years. I'll go ahead and share the story, because I'll tell you what, I haven't been on your show in a while, and so I'm sure there's a lot of people that haven't heard my work in a while.
This is our first live together. So
awesome. So. Yeah.
Traveling near New Boston, Michigan, hungry?
Well then, you need to check out New Boston Coney and Grill tucked away at 37005 Huron River Drive. With daily specials, homemade soups and desserts, and a staff that makes you feel like family, you will not be disappointed. Give them a try for dine-in or carry-out at 734-606-5313. You can find their page, including their menu, on Facebook. Bon appetit.
This experience was being taken as a little girl. And again, when we're looking at the cognitive interfaces the phenomenon employs, it is nearly symbiotic at times. In with this particular individual, she said, you know, my worldview consisted of video games, cartoons, not video games, I'm sorry, but cartoons and Archie comic books. And she said, then one night, this weird energy filled my room, lights were everywhere, and this being manifested, but it manifested as one of my favorite cartoons. And she said, at that point, we're about the same size, okay? So they take her, they do these experiments and stuff. Okay. So moving forward, she said, I didn't hear from these beings for a while. And then one night, she's like, you know, I got taller. I stopped watching those cartoons. I stopped reading Archie comic books. She said, and then in one night, the entity manifested again as that same cartoon character from years gone by. And she said, at that point, I'm a little bit taller than him. And it's looking at her, trying to, okay, where did I mess up? And essentially what happened was it realized, okay, I did not evolve according to your awareness of me. And then he says, okay, she's like, okay, then his eyes begin to do this number. It was a gray, but it was his eyes begin to do this. And she said that, it was a great once it manifested. But anyways, she said, I could feel it. And she reached out to me. She's like, I've been talking to researchers, other researchers, they don't believe me. But she said, it was measuring my belief in it. So what am I saying? Okay, Nathaniel, what are you saying? What I'm saying is this. If we're dealing with a species, plural, or even an intelligence, singular, that is literally creating symbiotic relationships with experiencers and taking attributes from that individual and applying it to itself as an archetype, not all the time, but enough to the point where it's like, okay, we got to mark that down because that's sinister. I had a case study years ago where this is incubi, but it's the same phenomenon, where a woman's going to bed and her husband walks up to the side of the bed. She says, I started getting real drowsy. Next thing I know, hey, hey, hey. And then about 20 minutes later, he gets off the bed and he establishes himself back where he was before. She said, that's when I start looking at his facial features. And he looked just enough like my husband for me to believe in the image. She said, that's when she realized, okay, oh my God, this is, I don't know what that is. And that's when it turned into a smoky apparition, floated out through the hallway. But my point here, guys, is that a lot of times the cognitive interface the phenomenon employs is so often believed in because it's created out of the memories of the experiencer. It is pieces of that experiencer are in the mask the entity is wearing. I was in the UK, I lectured at the Awakening in February. And, you know, there's a lot of people coming up to meet me and stuff and taking pictures and everything. And I'm you know, working, you know, how you guys doing? Thanks for video. My first time overseas. This is awesome. Well, this individual walks up to me, has a bunch of books and stuff. And he just asks me questions. And for those who don't know my work, it was devastating to me because I thought I had a grasp on it until I started doing deeper research. And I was like, trash everything. So, but what I lectured on was the symbiotic relationship in where the phenomenon will coexist, co-evolve, and then it will adapt. Okay. That's symbiosis. But somewhere in history, it mutated into parasitism. And there's only one step So blow your mind. When it's symbiosis, evolving, adapting, coexisting, when the parasite evolves, it takes on the attributes of that. It literally goes through everything it learns. It then goes into a new modus operandi. And so we're looking at the phenomenon. It is co-evolving with us. And the reason why a lot of the mass it wears is so easily believed in is because we're not realizing that's me. There's a part of its incarnation that came from my belief systems, from my archetypes and all of that. And that's why, again, and I'll shout, but that's why when the phenomenon diversifies its identity, it, for instance, Ted Rice, which I'm going to be talking to him here in a little bit. He was a child. And am I creeping you out?
I just had something come through my mind when you said they evolve, you know, and they're digging on our memories.
Yeah.
What about this genetic memory stuff that we have?
Very possible. Very. Yeah. What are they doing with that? Are they seeing that? Are they stepping into those roles? Ted Rice was in his room and his grandfather appeared. See, this is the real alien, ladies and gentlemen. Okay. Oh, wow. I touched a body. It's alien. Great. Time out. What are they doing? And so Ted Rice is in his bedroom and appears his grandfather, who is deceased. Okay. And this is what I'm saying. This is going to blow your mind. So now he's thinking, okay, that's my grandfather. And so he begins to apply grandfather characteristics to that entity. I got chills, man. He starts applying grandpa characteristics and watches behavioral patterns. Grandpa, I can trust him. This, I don't want. No. And then that entity tried to assault him. And what happened was it had donned the mask in order to gain trust. And the way it works is it will take you as long as it can. It'll go, okay, grandpa would have zagged. It zags. Up until a point when it steps into its own methodology. And where grandpa would have zagged, it zigs. And then you see for the first time, I have been applying wrong rules to an entity that is wearing an archetype. Yeah, I don't want to ramble, man.
Well, you know what? I've got Nain in chat and a couple other people, and I starred their questions. So I don't want to ask my questions in place of theirs. So I want to bring these up and have you kind of talk to them. So let's start with this one. This is a good one. How different is ritual magic to a Catholic Orthodox ritual religious mass?
This is very interesting. So there is the secular and the sacred. There is the undefiled and the defiled. And whatever this intelligence represents, and this is going to prove it, it is evolving, not just according to our awareness of it, but when you get into ceremonial magic, we have what's called the ultimate black mass, where it takes our evolutionary processes of religion and inverts it. And so let's go a little bit deeper. When you go into biblical antiquity and you see, and I never talk about this, by the way, but I'll do it tonight. When you look at the way Yahweh Elohim referred to these beings, he would talk about, okay, I want you to approach me this way, but don't you go out there and approach whatever is in the darkness. Why? Why? It makes you wonder. Like, it's so interesting. Even to the point that in Pauline Christology, Paul tells them, if another Jesus comes to you, he's dealing with archetypes, which, right? You already have a Jesus. You already have a grandpa. But if another one comes, and this is what we're dealing with again, this gets back into theology, but there were certain rituals that Yahweh condoned. The rituals he condemned seemingly were designed to conjure whatever is shivering in that dark abyss. And the way, again, that they're contacting the phenomenon is not technology. That's how ghost hunters come, right? Nope. When they go find a spot underneath the cosmology of the stars, let me build an earthen altar and let me sacrifice something. And in return, I'll get little trinkets. So my point, though, is throughout all of history, especially with, well, specifically with this intelligence, we used to have the ability to vet. Okay? Like I said, Ted Rice. Let's make it Dearon Edna. Dearon Edna shows up. Okay, are you a Bulls fan? Because Dearon Edna, no, that's not Dearon Edna. Because the traits and belief system is antithetical to the historical record of who we know Dearon Edna was, right? If it says this, we got something else to compare. The program, my friend, has introduced a new character at which we cannot bet. And that is your alien brain.
What were the Nordics?
It depends. I mean, obviously,
you don't hear about those much anymore.
Not really. I know MUFON talks a little bit about them with experiencers. But my thing is this, my friend, and this gets back both into the paranormal and ufology. Okay. And I'm going to kind of invert this, and then I'll land where I want to, hopefully. In the 90s, in England, there was what's called the Skoll Experiment. And it was a group of parapsychologists, psychics, and they were really after documenting any and all data they could regarding the afterlife. Mm. And so this will put things into perspective. And so they get into this house, and they got the candles lit, lights off, and they're approaching the intelligence pregnant in the darkness. And they're approaching it as if this intelligence or whatever is disincarnate. We're going to contact the discarnate. Well, during one of their seances, an alien appears. It's called Mr. Blue. I took a photograph of him. I think he was on one side of a TV or a screen. They took a picture of him. He also appeared after that. So let's look at this model for a fleeting moment. That is the equivalent, okay, of Wayne saying, like, you know what, man? Here is a phone number. I'm going to give you a phone number. And this is how to contact your great-great-grandmother. She's deceased, but dial the phone number. And then you dial the phone number, and a completely different species of being picks up. It would make me question, who gave me the number to begin with? Well, okay, why? Because it's toying with the human condition. And that's exactly what happened in the Skoll Experiment. When it manifested, matter of fact, it filled the room with such terror, they shut everything down. We're done. So what am I dealing with here? What I'm really talking about, ladies and gentlemen, is the fact that we truly do not know when the experience begins. We only know when the phenomenon manifests. And what we're realizing, I'll shut up at this. What we're realizing is that by the time Jack Parsons gets his altar, by the time that he goes out there, performs all these rituals, by the time he spends his money, his blood, his tears, his sweat, he's not the one conjuring. He's the one being conjured. And the phenomenon has given him the illusion of control. And so that's what I guess I'm trying to raise awareness, because they're playing by different rules. Egyptian hieroglyph, we're not doing that here. The reason they're playing by different rules is because they're playing a different game. And they keep getting away with it because they're diversifying into archetypes. I hope that makes sense.
No, it does. I get the idea, because if you were going to do an insurrection over a certain amount of time in a country, you're going to want to observe your target individuals in order to blend in. And maybe then, I mean, I'm trying to get a CIA guy on here to talk about how they do this in the real in the real are how they play with human psychology. Like they have us broken down in the CIA of how to initiate what they call a bump. Oh, hey, I'm sorry. I'm really sorry. How is everything going? You know, and that's your initial contact with the mark. You know what I mean? It's like they have all of this stuff figured out. And it's like, we do the same thing to each other that these kind of things mimic and do to us. So Nain had another great question here, man. Nain's on top of it tonight. And he says, was Crowley accessing through his magic the character Lamb said to be an extraterrestrial? How does magic connect to entities like Lamb?
That's fascinating. Well, Crowley, to my knowledge, never considered an ET. He considered an interdimensional and what's called an Enochian being. And also this, this is interesting. Magic, to our knowledge, erupted in the imagination of the earliest practitioners out of nowhere. Okay? We're talking about the statistical likelihood of someone constructing a series of letters into a series of words, knowing how to phonetically render that through their vocal cords, knowing how to modify their behavior according to the behavior of the phenomenon, modifying its dietary needs. And then all of that is an accident? Absolutely not. And this is what we're realizing. It's okay. At what point is the phenomenon conjuring us? And is it possible we're on the wrong side of a two-way mirror and we do not understand that this intelligence is orchestrating entire events, allowing us to believe, well, okay, sure, I'm going to go turn left, I'm going to turn right. You know, it makes no sense unless you start to look at a hyper-evasive singular intelligence that through the incubi literature, it inseminated. Through the debunk phenomenon, completely different. No, it inseminated. And mind you guys, and I can't get into this because I don't have enough time, but in the debunk phenomenon, these dream demons were manifesting to women. Well, I thought that's just UFO abduction. No, it was inseminating them with fetuses. I thought that was incubi. Nope. It was placing consciousness and the fetus in the same womb at the same time, to the point that possession accompanied pregnancy. I'm talking about the self-replication of species. And at a certain time, the phenomenon pulled both the fetus and the consciousness out. In the exorcist, in debunk literature, in Levant, it was actually in Safdie Israel, and this is going to change the whole dynamic, asking the question, were these experiencers pregnant by the entity or were they pregnant with him? And that's when they realized this is a more sinister hybridization program. It's a self-replication of species.
Okay, so Nain has been on this tonight, man, and he asked, you know, you brought up the conjuring and words and mad, and he asked this, and I had this primed for you next, and you were just leading into it, but which is more powerful in magic, thinking words to conjure or to speak the words to conjure?
Well, we don't, again, I'm going to give you a scenario here, and
it's just the energy, right? I mean, right. It doesn't really matter.
Well, let me say this. Okay. And hopefully this will explain it. So in Babylon, Mesopotamia also, there were deities or demons, I should say, where if the house had paranormal activity, if there was something like a sickness in the household, the father would go to a blacksmith and one of the individuals that actually create images out of the metal, he would say, okay, it's going to blow your mind because you're going to see, oh my God, it is symbiotic. They would say, okay, I want you to create a demigod or a demon, if you will, I guess. And I want to use this figurine statue, if you will. I'm going to put it in my household, and it's going to scare away the sickness. It's going to scare away the paranormal activity. And so he goes to the blacksmith, okay, what are the dimensions of this entity? And from the mind of the man emerges the dimension of the entity itself out into metal. That individual takes it home. Now, there are ritual bowls talking about how when they're in bed at night, something is inside of that statue. Now, this is what's fascinating. What we're dealing with, ladies and gentlemen, is this. This is the answer to his question. The entity was molding the mind of the man before the blacksmith was molding the image of the entity. It wants to become incarnate. And again, if we're going to deal with percentages, no. Right now, the leading scientist in ufology, especially within Rupture, his name is Tim Taylor, okay? You know what Tim Taylor's not doing? He was a part of the Invisible College. He's not sending probes to space to talk to aliens. He's anchoring himself out in the middle of a desert, okay?
This is going to blow your mind. Sounds familiar, don't it?
Absolutely. He's building altars, my friend. And so let me go and put a nail in this coffin for everybody. Yes, the incarnation is modern, but the incantations are ancient. And that is what matters. The whole model that we're... Okay, yeah, build me a Ouija board, and I'll be an extraterrestrial. Okay, fine. Sure. And so what I'm looking at now is, again, if our model, if our concept of this intelligence is wrong. See, coming back up to this. How many of you guys have been to a house? You guys probably maybe even had it at your own home, where there's a door frame and let's say a little Courtney, okay? She's 12 years old. You pull, boop, man, you're growing, baby girl. You know, she's just like 8 or 9 now, you're getting taller, okay? Then you have these different, right, denominations of height. We're going, those are all different girls. No, that is an intelligence that is growing and evolving. Growing and evolving. Now, in all of its incarnations, again, like I said, the missing fetus syndrome is not new. Not new. The altars are not new. The implants are not new. The hybridization program is not new. The technology is not new. So what do we have that is new? A new archetype, one of which we cannot vet outside of it manifesting. That's why we have people working with the Pentagon who's saying the message of this entity is right, because you documented the miracle. It's leading us into a labyrinth where in times past, we could test the spirit. That ain't Ted Rice's grandfather. But what if the program created a new character? And now the only thing we can go off of is their words. That is concerning to me.
Yeah, that's some deep stuff there, because that's like manipulation of people before they know they're even being manipulated to be manipulated to get in contact with these entities. In old antiquity, people were aware of these things. We're not. I mean, there's so many Christians out there that, and I don't mean to throw mud on Christianity but I've got lots of Muslim friends. I've got Christian friends, and the Muslims are very much in touch with a spiritual world, the jinn, that these things are from the different worlds, and you know, they're still very much connected with that even in the modern day. Westerners, we are, like I said, kind of buffered by our society and our technology, and we've forgotten what we can really do.
Correct. Our gifts. Yeah. And a lot of people medicate the gift they're called to manifest because they're not in touch And I'll tell you, I used to do that. I didn't know who I was. I'd sit on a bar stool for hours. Just, what am I doing? I have no idea. I have no purpose until I stepped into the role that I am now, the meaning that I'm trying to fulfill now. That's when all of the pieces came to fore. But again, we're still trying to define when the experience starts. It starts when they assemble the first rock of the altar. We thought it's when it manifested. No. And so, and I'll introduce this thought to you guys. And I said it before, I'll say it again. If our model's wrong, then our timeline is also wrong. And if our timeline's wrong, disclosure's not coming. Disclosure's been here. It's just, it's there. And they're telling us that. Like I said, the incarnations are modern, sure. But the incantations are ancient. Yes. So I had a case a while ago. It was actually during COVID. And this is actually a friend of my family. So this is really awkward. It's like, oh my God. Well, I got a phone call. It was about 1 in the morning, I think it was. And it was, like I said, it was a couple, husband and wife. You know, they're local. So like, okay, like what's going on? You guys never do this. You all right? Yeah, we're in the parking garage at a hospital. It's okay. And I said, why? They're like, well, they're not letting us see her, but our daughter, it's her biological daughter, and it's the father's stepdaughter. But she said, my daughter has been having abdominal issues. She's been losing sleep, and we don't know what's going on, but they're not letting us see her. And they're like, you know, we know. And this is probably a version you guys don't know. But they're like, okay, we know that you can contact and use whatever, your gifting, whatever. I said, okay, fine. So I'm out there in my driveway, whatever. And the only way I can explain it is in my mind's eye, I saw, guys don't freak out because I don't want you to be like, okay, we're done. I saw a man, his name was, I think, Dale. He had a mustache. He was wearing dirty jeans. He was smoking. And I said, this man is a rapist. I saw him to my left. I said, he's a rapist. And I said, who is this? I think his name's Dan. I said, who is this? The mother started crying. She said, that is my daughter's biological father. He's deceased. All I know is I experienced it. I cannot explain it. He begins to tell me what happened. So I tell them, this is what happened. Boom, 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 boom. Your daughter was assaulted. She's dealing with a lot of PTSD, a lot of trauma. And the attachment that was actually designing that traumatic experience is now stepping in to her world to feed on the trauma. Now, okay, weird. I understand. So 2 weeks later, I get a phone call. All right, what's going on? We set her down and we asked her if such and such happened. She started bawling. Yes. She said, I went to a college party. I was supposed to meet my best friend there. It's at a house I'm not familiar with. I had to wait for her. I go upstairs to the bathroom, and a big, burly man pulls me into the room. And she said she was assaulted, but the man had a certain bravado, a certain just kind of a really rough guy. He had a scent, like smell to him, musky, all that stuff. He had a lot of very, very pronounced characteristics. She said after that event, she's like, I'm trying to get my life together, trying to go, you know, get therapy and everything. She says, but then when I go to bed at night, an entity is doing the same thing to me in my dreams that that man was doing to me at the party. And so what we realized, at least I did, and this is what I believe, is that that entity caused a life event and then returned to feed on the fear and the trauma that it had caused. And so what I teach people is to close the door to where it's like, I did this in my youth, where you starve it. And I know the chat's probably like, oh my God, this guy's an idiot. But it is true. It happens. And it's one of the more sinister aspects of the phenomenon.
Yeah. All right. So got another question for you, and then we're going to probably start wrapping it up here because it's, okay. Dude, it's already been an hour and 15. Man, all right. Awesome. So this is just something maybe you can elaborate on or riff on here. The biggest deception Satan uses is to convince us he doesn't exist. And now my Muslim friends don't say Satan. They say the shaitan, which is the right. Adversary and the leader. of the fallen angels, as they call it, would be Samjaza, right, or something close to that. And so anyways, what do you think?
Well, I mean, do I believe, okay, here's what I believe, because I guess that's what's being asked. Number one, I do believe that there is an hierarchy with this intelligence. There is a reason why experiencers are being taught out of body to fly craft that they never fly in bodied. Never. They live their lives and die. Why? So I do believe that there is sort of a recruitment process occurring, and we would call it Satan, or, you know, Hasatan in Jewish mythology, of course. But what terrifies me, though, my friend, is that my evangelical neighbors have so dogmatized, I don't know if that's a word, I'm gonna make it up, dogmatized Satan and demonology, that when this intelligence evolves into its final incarnation and begins to apply the attributes they give, it will walk up to them and it will convince them. Why? Because they don't realize it's evolving. This is, again, within ufology. I heard one UFO, well, demons don't have demons don't have bodies. No, sorry. They needed bodies. They had the disability of being without being a being. And so in order to exist, they had to replicate, which then you have implantation, impregnation, all that. And so on both sides, I think that we're going to learn that the phenomenon, again, it's mutating, and it's up to us to catch up to it. If that makes sense, I don't know.
No, that makes sense, because if we adopt that model of the evolving and adapting to us, then right, that definitely makes sense. Okay, I got one last question for you. And this comes from Woo Rider DG. He says, question for the guest. Has he heard of the seven generals of hell? If so, can he elaborate? And then we'll end it on that one.
Yeah, I can elaborate, and I've heard that. But the idea of hell, again, is Dante's Inferno. This, now we're getting into linguistics and the origin of hell. Now, I'm not saying that eternal punishment doesn't exist. I'm saying that entire concept was a later development. What we're really asking is, okay, what is Sheol? What is the grave? And I'm not saying there's not eternal punishment. I'm saying that when we're getting into specific linguistics and the origin of these concepts, it's important. So if there is no, if there's no hell like that of Dante's Inferno, then there's no seven generals. And what I've, again, you guys have to, I have a lot of books here I can give you guys references to, but me saying that hell is not what we think it is not me saying there's not eternal punishment. But again, when we're looking at grimoires, it's them giving us their names. It's them, right, telling us, okay, draw a circle of salt and I'll stay inside the circle. Guys, it's documented. They're not even playing by their rules. What makes us think they're going to play by ours? That's the question. I'm not trying to dodge it. I'm saying that in order for there to be seven generals, there has to be that version of hell.
Right. Okay. Well, geez, Nathaniel, this has gone by so fast. This is right. This is ridiculous, man. And chat has just been on fire. So, thank you, chat. You guys have been awesome. All right, Nathaniel, any thing coming up? How do you want people to find you on the web? All that good stuff.
So I'm going to pull up my schedule. You guys can follow me on YouTube. I have an entire playlist full of my guest appearances, or at least the ones they published on YouTube. I think I'm up to like 119. You can follow me on Instagram as well, the Nathaniel Gillis. So my next appearance is March 13th. I will be with Truth and Shadows. And then just follow me there, and then I'll tell you my next show after that. I so appreciate it, man. And I Again, I have ADHD, and you guys probably noticed that. So, but I had a blast. Thank you so much for having me back on. I really appreciate it.
Well, I'm sitting here doing, without Michelle here, I'm doing everything. So I definitely know the feeling of having ADHD, even though I haven't been diagnosed. I think I'm getting it because I'm like trying to watch chat and everything. So, all right, Nathaniel, well, we're going to go ahead and cut you loose here. And thank you again, man. We'll have you back on here soon. There's a lot to cover still.
Wonderful. Oh, yeah. We've got to get deeper. All right. Have a good one, brother.
All right. Take care. All right, everybody. Wow. Okay. I know he ruffles a lot of feathers because, you know, there's the demonic realm aspect of this. And a lot of people don't agree with that. I don't necessarily agree with it. I think there's just a couple, you know, I think there's different things going on out there. That's just my thoughts right now. So, but chat, you guys were amazing tonight. Thank you very much. I don't know how I'm accidentally streaming to Twitch, and we are having some very interesting people that decided to jump into chat. You guys didn't see it, but yeah. Yeah, so exactly, Bad Wolf, you said it perfectly. When worlds collide, man, you nailed it. Because I'll tell you, if your worldview is that of demons and religious, you know, religious upbringing and things, and these things have the ability to mimic and to learn from you, then that would make sense that that would be how they would be perceived. Now, me being a science teacher and Michelle being a teacher and educated, was what we saw, that giant flying triangle, a projection? Were they in our heads? So, I mean, you can ask 1,000 questions and you can drive yourself crazy with this. But all in all, it's fascinating. And it's, man, Nathaniel's always a great guest. If you catch any of his shows that he's on, he is just fantastic. So, yeah. So, like I said, Michelle not being here tonight. Chat, you guys were awesome. Dorothy, thank you for the super chat. You're always amazing. Thank you for being an awesome moderator. Jason Finch is out there. Nane, your questions were dead on tonight. Kelly Lewis, Bad Wolf 66. Who else did we have? Woo Riders DG joined us tonight. Thank you, S. Lee. Kelly Lewis, of course. Welcome. Blue Crossroads showed up late because he was on the phone, which is good. That's, you know, you got to take care of things. You can always watch the show again. Aaron's Energy 313. Man. And then Guy Merritt showed up for a little while. He's very much a nuts and bolts guy. And I'm kind of there too. And by the way, anybody who watches the show and decides to join our Facebook group, you're more than welcome to. The only thing that Michelle and I ask is that you guys read the rules to join the group and say that you agree to those rules. We do, you know, have free speech and things like that. I totally value that. I dedicated part of my life to sticking up for those values and our Bill of Rights so we could have these freedom of speech, but there are certain things we won't tolerate within the group. So if you did try to join the group and you were declined, you probably did not answer yes, that you agree to the rules. So please make sure you do that. Let's see. Is there anything else? I can't think of anything. What is your Facebook? Kelly, go into our links in the show description. You should see a link to it there. All right. Or you can just go on Facebook, and it's our old show title, which was the Michigan UFO Sightings and Paranormal Encounters podcast. And that was our group page. It's a private page. So, but yeah, you're more than welcome to join, or I should say it's a group. And then we also have a page where we just put stuff up there. Here, I will link it for you. And this will be for anybody if you want to join. Here we go into chat. There we go. So if you want to join our Facebook group, go ahead, do that. Read the rules and say that you agree to them, and I will approve you. But again, chat, you guys are awesome. You know, I just, it warms my heart to see you guys here every night and every time we do a show. And you guys are halfway decently behaved. So that's awesome. I've been in other chat rooms where it's just been a disaster, and probably some of it's from bots and things too. But yeah. Oh, okay. Bad Wolf 66 is a first time viewer. Well, welcome, Bad Wolf. Appreciate you. So, and anybody else that's watching for the first time, and I'm sorry, my voice is starting to go. Being a teacher, talking for 8 hours a day, 5 days a week, and then living in Michigan, where the weather, you know, is really trying to kill you. So, you know, it's going around. Oh, thank you, Bad Wolf, for that subscription, man. Really appreciate that. Yeah, please like, share, subscribe if you like the show. We got more great guests coming up. So we are booked all the way through April at this point. So let me see. Let me go to our YouTube channel here real quick. And I want to tell you who we have coming on. So a guest we got coming on that I am super, I mean, if you guys know me and you followed our channel or our podcast before or anything like that, you guys know how much I'm into ancient civilizations and us being a high-tech people with amnesia. I'm kind of in the Graham Hancock, even as an earth scientist, there's so many things that we learn that don't make sense and nobody can answer me. Well, we've got on a special day, March 15th, which is this coming Friday, we have Dennis Stone, whose family has owned what they call America's Stonehenge. He's been on History Channel. He's been on Ancient Aliens. He's been on In Search Of back in the day with Leonard Nimoy. They do all kinds of things out there. There's equinoxial alignments with the structure that's there. And it's in Salem, of course, Salem, New Hampshire. And the site is fascinating. Ancient walls. What looks like might be a sacrificial table, getting back to what Nathaniel was saying. I mean, just great. And then on next Sunday, or no, not next Sunday. So right now, I'm waiting for confirmation for somebody on, let's see, when is it? The 17th. I'm just waiting, guys, keep up on that. But on the 17th, I've got a guest coming on. He's an author of a book that talks about what will happen. He's a former military Marine. He's retired out of the Marines. He's dealt with a lot of people in the military and has asked the questions about what would happen if aliens made contact, and are there things prepared for us, and who would handle that and all that stuff. So that's going to be fascinating. So I'm just waiting for their publicist to give me some more information. You'll see that thumbnail pop up. And then April 7th, get this. A gentleman by the name of Bruce E. Rapinoe contacted me, and he just released a book. And he's a mainstream scientist who was abducted by aliens, and he wrote a book about it. The guy is a straight-up doctor, neurophysicist, neurobiologist, very smart guy, and he will be coming on the show April 7th at 8 p.m., and we're going to talk about his book and his encounter. So, and let's see what kind of evidence he has, because is it something like Nathaniel was talking about? So this is going to be awesome, you guys. And like I said, I've got bookings all the way up into May, and things are really blowing up. So, you know, it's because of guys like you and everybody in chat sharing us out, spreading the love. So, yeah. Yep, that's right. Dorothy, April 7th. Mainstream scientist, doctor, and neurobiologist abducted by aliens. Yes. Yep. I don't want to say he's wacky, right? Like, he's insane, which I don't know. And I don't know if you guys know this or not. And then I'm going to shut up and get out of here before my voice cuts out. But there is a gentleman out there. He's got a small channel, and he's called the UFO Therapist. He's out of Colorado. And I'm trying to get him to come on the show. So if that happens, I'll let you guys know. But that I want somebody who's a straight up psychologist. The last show he did, he was reading an article from Psychology Today, and it just ripped people. They called us the UFO people. Here they come again. Right. So anyways, I want to have him come on and talk about that. Yeah. The UFO Therapist. That's the name of his channel. And he doesn't have that many subs, and he doesn't have that many videos out there. He's got like 20. But he's a very interesting guy. Nane asks, anything on Michigan Bigfoot or Dogman? Dude, go back just a few weeks ago. Look for our show with Bigfoot Michigan Rob. He just lives about 30 miles from me. I will tell you what. You want to know about Michigan Bigfoot and Dogman and his encounter, which started him down this path? Check that show out. Let me link it for you really quick right here. Grab that link. And of course, Bigfoot Michigan Rob has his own show. You can check him out. Also, he's part of the Texas Front Porch crew. And we got Blondes and Booze over there as well. We've been on their show. Great stuff coming up, man. Just great stuff. All right. So, yeah. And we've done some other stuff on Dogman and Bigfoot here in Michigan. So you just have to dig through the archives. That's going back into our audio podcast days, but everything is up here on our channel. All right, everybody. With that, I can feel my voice is just about to take off. So thank you, everyone. You guys are awesome. Thank you for joining me tonight. This is on an off night. It's a Saturday instead of a Sunday. But, you know, in the grand scheme of things, it doesn't really matter. You can watch and listen whenever you want. So thank you for the super chats. Thank you for the PayPals. You guys are awesome. Thank you, Nane, Dorothy, for being a moderator. Kelly Lewis, thank you for being here. Yeah, Bad Wolf, thanks for joining us. S. Lee, Kelly Lewis, Diane Boss, of course, Diane. You're awesome. All right, everybody, have a great night. And it's March here in Michigan. And you know what that means. The biggest UFO flaps have happened during that time, at least that we're seeing. But remember, keep your eyes to that sky. Let's go.